left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
Okay, happy Friday, friends. What's going on? It is Friday, November 22nd with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Flames Talk's available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Lots to get to this hour. What's up, Wes?
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And
can I ask you a question?
Yeah, sure.
I'm still pretty new at this, as you know.
Uh-huh.
Are we allowed to say bastard on the radio?
Well, we better be able to, because we're just about to.
Okay, all right.
Well, we're not going to. Friggin' potty mouth Dan Vladar sure
potty
is.
Mouth Dan.
So we always thought. Hey, here's what I know. We are pretty much officially one quarter of the way through Calgary season. Like, technically, at some point during the game Saturday against Minnesota will be the official quarter mark.
Yes.
But you know what? 20 of 82, close enough. 20 games in, 62 to go. And they are sitting, if I double check, squint, and triple check, do I have this right? Second in the Pacific Division?
Yeah.
Oh, but it must be like on points percentage. They must have played way more games by points percentage. They're probably fifth. No, hold on. They've also got the second best points percentage in the Pacific Division. By any metric, they're second in the Pacific, a point off first in the Pacific. What the hell is going on here? What is happening a quarter of the way through the season?
Well, you could say heck.
This is when Dan Vladar sets the tone a little earlier on Friday. This was his description of the first quarter Flames.
We're a bunch of hungry bastards in here. So we all want it. We all want it, and we are not going to give it away for free.
So the hungry bastards. Are they want it and they're not giving it away for free. But I mean, that is a great description and a great way to sum up what the first quarter of this season has been, because they have been hungry. They have been very adamant about their belief in the group.
Yeah.
They have been very rarely have they been the second hardest working team on the ice. They have routinely been at the very worst, matched in work ethic by the other team. And on many nights, they've been the hardest working team. So there's a group that has, I think, captured the attention of a lot of Flames fans and captured the attention of a lot of Flames fans who maybe weren't expecting to have their attention captured like this. There was a lot of ho-hum
going into the season.
Yeah, of course.
Have they not started to really capture the attention of the league? Like,
I have no idea if that. I don't know if when the national thing starts to pick up. Maybe they have.
Yeah.
I mean, they definitely have exceeded pretty much every national pundit's expectation. I think in this city, there was a little bit more of a, and I'm not trying to say, oh, well, we're smarter than you, but I think that there was a pretty realistic idea of what this group was going to be. Like, how many times did you even say on this program, if you think they're going to finish 31st, you're not paying attention to the roster. And I know
and
that
I meant that more to some of the other rosters. Like, if you thought they were going to beat the San Jose Sharks or the Chicago Blue Jackets in a race to the bottom, then you've picked the wrong pony.
Yeah. And you've got a group that I think many people in this market believed was going to be in the mix. Like, it's going to be competitive. No, nobody looked at them and said, I don't think anybody had them being fighting for top spot in the Pacific through the first quarter of the season. But I think many people in this market, fans or otherwise, looked at it and said, yeah, they're probably going to be competitive. And then the good preseason and good training camp adds on to that. They're probably going to be competitive. They're probably going to be in the mix. And they're probably going to be right there with other teams like St. Louis and Seattle and Utah and teams like that. And they're a little ahead of all those teams right now. But I think what happens is, when you're a competitive group and when your roster probably puts you in the middle of the pack of the Western Conference and then you get elite goaltending,
yeah.
Well, then all of a sudden, a competitive group can get elevated to a much better spot. So you combine those two things and hard work and belief and all that type of stuff.
Hunger.
Well, I mean, they are hungry bastards.
Apparently so.
When you get to that point, all of a sudden, you're...
Bunch of hungry bastards.
Yeah. When you get to... when you're that, and him and Dustin Wolf are given the team... top five goaltending in the NHL, yeah, you can be in second place in the Pacific Division, and it doesn't maybe seem as mind-blowing as it might have had I told you this in September. You know, having watched the group and watched the way their goaltenders have played, you're like, yeah, I kind of get why they're in second right now.
Yeah, because it when you watch the games individually, and you and I chatted about this off-air earlier, like there's not a lot of games. Really, just that two-game road trip where you think, geez, they're the second-best team on the ice by a long ways. There's not a bunch of games where you sit there after, and I'm sure this has been your experience on the post-game show, there's not a lot of games where you think to yourself, they did not deserve to be in that hockey game.
Yeah.
I don't know that they've stolen a game, quote-unquote. I think they've, you know, had some comebacks that the other team certainly would feel like they gave it away or they let the Flames off the hook a little bit. But I don't think, you know, we're not talking about smoke and mirrors here. We're not talking about a bunch of voodoo. This looks like a style of hockey, and I know how taxing it is, but this looks sustainable, doesn't it?
I don't know.
I honestly don't know.
And I'm not trying to be
The results necessarily are sustainable, or are they going to get 11 wins in every 20 game set? I'm not sure about that, but just the style and the belief, I do think they can sustain that part of it.
I definitely think the belief isn't going anywhere. That much I'm quite confident in. What I don't know, and maybe there's a good time to get into it. It's Pat and Wes. We're a quarter of the way through the season for the Flames. Text lines open at 960-960. We'd love to hear from you as always. Maybe we enjoy doing this every once in a while, just kind of bouncing some questions that we haven't pre-planned out at one another, and just based on the first quarter of the season and based on what we've seen through 20 games. And I think that's a good way to kind of break down where this group is. So maybe there's a good time to dive right in on that and go back and forth.
The Flames at the quarter mark.
What has surprised you most about this group?
I mean, would it be too simple to say their record?
No.
Because as you were talking about earlier, we sat here in the summer and said, this team's not finishing 31st. They're not finishing 32nd. If they win the draft lottery, it's literally winning the lottery. It's not because they had the highest odds. I know that's something you and I agreed upon, is that they weren't going to be that bad. And yet I'll be the first to admit, because I don't want to make it sound like I thought I saw this coming either, I didn't have 11-6-3 on my bingo card. And so I think there's been a whole lot of surprises, whether you know, go from an individual standpoint and look at, you know, the immediate fit that Kevin Ball's been, or the immediate success that Dustin Wolf has experienced. There's a lot of individual storylines. You know, there's been some surprises, certainly from a team standpoint. While a group can build that sort of belief and resilience, I don't think you ever expect four third period comebacks in your first 20 games. You don't expect to come back from 4-1 after 20 minutes on opening night, all that. But I think the answer, and then I'll throw it back to you for yours, I think the answer to my biggest surprise is simply the record.
I mean, I think any of the answers that you come up with are going to seem quite obvious on the surface, but I think that is part of the overall allure of what this group has done. Because for me, the biggest surprise is the fact that, the fact that they've been able to be a team that has scored as little as they have now, 17 straight games without three goals, or without more than three goals, rather.
Yeah.
So 17 straight games of three goals or less. that they have spent as little time leading in games through the first quarter, that they've spent as much time as they have trailing in games, that they've been in as many one-goal games as they have, all of those things. The fact that they have been, that the margin of error has been so slim throughout the entire first 20 games, and they're five games above 500. That's my biggest surprise. Because you're like,
yeah,
you just, when you look at this roster and you say, okay, here's the roster, they're not going to score very much, that's going to be their first 20 games, what would your projection be? I probably would have been quite down the list for me to get to, you know, 11-6-3 and an over 600 points percentage, and then sitting second in the Pacific Division. I thought they would be kind of in that 500 range, and I thought they would be kind of, if you were to say the first 20 games, maybe I would have gone something like 9-8-3 or something like that, right? And that,
yeah.
And that would keep them competitive. Well, I mean, the difference between 9-8-3 and 11-6-3 is you, or whatever they, is that 11-6-3? Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that now all of a sudden you've got good goaltending and you've got belief and you've got some timely scoring and you've got a high level of comfort playing in kind of uncomfortable close games.
And you've got a little bit of a, I don't know if buffer is the right word because the Pacific is so tight and I believe will continue to be, but you've, what you accomplish when you get off to a solid start is you can lose a couple games and it's not the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think this question is typically a pretty easy one to answer. We throw it around all the time, but I actually think it's pretty difficult today.
Okay.
Who's the team MVP at the quarter mark of the season?
I think it's Dustin Wolf. But, and that's a weird one because he's only played, what, he's 11 of 20? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's 11-9. He's played just over 50% of the games, but I think it's Dustin. I really do. And it's not even taking anything away from Dan, who we expect to get the start Saturday against Minnesota. When Ryan Huska smiles and says there's a pretty good chance that Dan Vladar is starting, and also Vladar was the first one off the ice at kind of a practice-slash-morning skate hybrid. Like, okay, Dustin Wolf's getting the start on Saturday, it feels like. But even though he's only gotten whatever it is, 55% of the games, the way that he's played, the swagger that he's instilled, I think it's got to be Wolf.
It very well could be Wolf and Vladar almost as a tandem.
That if you want, because Dan's been very good for him too. It's just there's something about when Wolf is playing, the swagger, the confidence, and it's like it's very Kiprasov-like, I'm not going to go down that road if he's going to be, you know, 32 is going to be hanging beside 34. Like, I don't want to go there. But what I mean by that is when Mika was at his best and when he was in his kind of heyday from about 2004 to 2008, he made everything look easy.
Yeah.
He still made spectacular ones on top of that. And then everything was very ho-hum. Didn't matter how spectacular looking the save was. His facial expression never changed. His routine where he took a sip of water and went for a skate never changed. Like, it was always the same. And I just think when somebody looks that routine and that almost bored between the pipes, like, hey, this, I just made a great glove save. Like, yeah, of course I did. Like, yeah, what's next? Like, when you've got that between the pipes, I just think it instills so much confidence in the five guys in front of you. And I've seen a lot of that in Dustin Wolf and his 11 starts. Like, yeah, cross seam. Of course I was going to be there. I wasn't not making that save. You're like, that was Artemi Panarin. He just made that stop on a cross seam pass. Like, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be there. And there's just been so much of that from Dustin. That's why I lean slightly towards him over Rasmus Anderson, who would probably be the guy who would be contending most with it.
Yeah, and I think I'll just maybe lay out the case for Rasmus Anderson.
I think
you're wrong. But the minutes that Rasmus Anderson is playing, I mean, we're talking about a guy averaging just a shade under 25 a night, which means he's played damn near as many minutes as Dustin Wolf, and Dustin Wolf's a goaltender. So Rasmus Anderson, you know, the case for him starts with the fact that he is just always out there and always out there in those difficult situations. You know, I mentioned this to you last night as we were talking way too late as we both wrapped up our work and walked out of the Saddle Dome. I thought the most important game, sorry, the most important moment in that game last night was Rasmus Anderson sticking out his left foot to block that shot by Artemi Panarin after a terrific cross seam pass by Adam Fox. I know that Dustin Wolf is great at reading those cross seam passes, but I'm not sure he was getting to that one. Mm-hmm. And that shot block, Rasmus Anderson, by the way, second in the league in blocked shots at this point behind his old buddy Chris Tanev. That shot block last night, I thought, was the one moment in the game that, if it wasn't the most important, it was the easiest to overlook. It was the crucial, probably not winning without it moment that would be easiest to just kind of shrug off. I didn't mention it in the 1,000 words I wrote about the game. I don't know if it ever came up on the post-game show. Like, it wasn't one of those moments that you were going to be talking about all night, but I'm not sure they win that game without it. I think this team has, in a lot of ways, kind of embodied that attitude that we love about Rasmus Anderson, that sort of F you, we'll prove you wrong mindset. I think that this group has sort of taken that on as a whole. And so I don't think Wolf is the wrong answer, but Rasmus Anderson's the other candidate. Yeah,
and those would be the two for me. They really would be. And I just
with
go...
an honorable mention to Michael Backlund, because we are not talking enough about how well he's playing.
Do we ever talk enough about what he does, though?
You cannot talk enough about how well he's playing. I mean, it's contractually, you just can't. You can't hit those...
That's true.
Yeah, quotas. Yeah.
With the quotas that Bax has given me over the last 15 years, it's very hard to hit. By the way, a former goaltender, former NHL goaltender, just fired me a text. He's like, when a goalie doesn't have to make ridiculous saves, it's because he's in position. 32 just gets there quick to be in better position. Yeah. That's exactly what it is, right? As a fellow former NHL goaltender and a goaltending expert like me, neither of those things are true.
No.
But you talk to enough people who understand the sport and understand the position, the way that guy reads it and the way that guy has with his athleticism, yeah, he can make some of the most difficult high dangers look really easy, and that's what Dustin Wolf's story has been so far. Okay, what is this group's identity, if you were to answer that question, through 20 games?
Well, let Dan Vladar take it.
I really don't think that this is all that wrong.
We're a bunch of hungry bastards in here, so we all want it, and we are not going to give it away for free.
Could you send me that clip so when I call to order pizza tonight, I can just play it? When they answer the phone, I can just play the we're a bunch of hungry bastards part?
Yes, sir. What can we get you then? we've got three larges on at Domino's for $14.
Hey, give me.
That's not an insult at all. That is one of the greatest. Well, the Domino's app, when you see some of those
three
coupons,
largest part was a little bit.
I don't know. There's a lot of hungry bastards.
Okay. I see. I thought you were joking about my midsection.
Yeah.
You get a little sensitive.
No, I would not do that. Not on the air, anyway.
I think the identity, and I can't put it as well as Dan Vladar did, because he did a good job there of summing it up. I think it's a group that is relentless. And their identity is that they come at you in waves and they don't stop. They've stopped for a grand total of 120 minutes. And it was when they got their lunch handed to them in Vegas and then in Utah. Mm-hmm. But I think that is the identity for me. This is a group that just rolls and rolls and rolls. They come at you in waves. They're relentless. They're hard to kind of knock down and keep down. That's how I would describe it. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, it's really not all that different. I mean, it all goes back to, I just think that there's buy-in, and I think that there is the desire to work. And that's not always something that you see in this league. And the fact that even the two games they lost, it wasn't because they were like dogging it and, you know, yeah, we're just whatever, we're just here to collect the paycheck, like none of that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the execution and the some of the other detail stuff wasn't there, but just the fact that they're always there to work. And again, you can count on one hand how many times they've been outworked this year. their work ethic's been matched sometimes, like the Winnipeg game. Yeah, the work ethic was matched and they lost, right? And on other nights, work ethic gets matched and sometimes they'll lose. That's just the way of the NHL. But, I mean, you take a look at the Rangers game. They outworked the Rangers, and a more talented team on paper got their lunch handed them. Even though it was a one-goal game, you come away from that game saying, well, who's the better team that night? Well, it was clearly the home team, and that's because they came to work, and the Rangers weren't ready to match their work ethic, and they got rolled over a little bit. So that, to me, is... At worst, you're going to match their ethic. At worst, you're going to match their work rate. And that, to me, would be the identity of this group that I think has been most palpable.
What would be their signature win so far?
The Vancouver game to start the year. Like, it has to be. And I know Wilsey would disagree. He thinks it's the game against the Rangers, and I think that's a fair one, too, because of the opponent they played and the way they played.
Yeah.
But, I mean, just in terms of... When I think of signature win, I think of memorable win, and I don't know if there's going to be a more memorable win all year long than what we saw on night one at Rogers Arena, because just everything that went into it, and the way that it kind of set the tone for their start, and maybe in a lot of ways has set the tone for the first quarter, and maybe the entire season, that is, it's going to be hard to knock that one off for me.
That one was too easy. And when I say too easy, I'm just not going to spend 2 minutes repeating your answer because you nailed it. I'm just going to ask you another question.
Sure.
I'm not going to count that last
one.
Finish this thought for me.
Okay.
The Flames can't/won't keep this up if.
There's like three or four that I want to say. I'm trying to think which one would be the like the number one.
Okay.
If they don't have a line kind of establish itself or a player or two establish themselves as the offensive leaders. I think it's great to have depth, but right now it's like kind of depth that isn't scoring. And so I think whether it's Kadri and Backlund or Zeri and Coronado or Zeri and Kadri or whoever, I think they need two forwards to kind of establish themselves like Naz did last year as the offensive leaders. They don't need to be 100-point threats, but I think you do need somebody or a couple players to solidify themselves as the offensive leaders right now, because right now they're not scoring very much. It's, to steal Rob Kerr's term, it's like chopping wood out there to try to generate offense despite nights where they get almost 50 shots on net. They only scored 3 times. They need one or two guys to step up and carry a little bit more of the load offensively. And I just, that to me, I think is something that needs to happen. And then all of a sudden, I think some of the other things follow along. They play with the lead a little bit more. They trail a whole lot less. They trail going into the third periods less. They have to rely on goaltending less. All those things, I think, follow in behind if that thing starts to change.
You raise a terrific point. I just called up the stat to make sure I had the specific number. Rasmus Anderson leads the Calgary Flames in scoring 12 points. He is tied for 124th in NHL scoring. And so... the fact that we're talking about your leading forward scorer or your leading producer among forwards having 11 points, the fact, the fact that we're talking about Matt Coronado spending a chunk of the season in the minors and already tied for your team goal scoring lead at 6, the fact that we could spend more time listing guys who are in worrisome slumps than guys who are producing at the rate you need. That absolutely, I think you raise a really good point.
Okay, and just very quick.
Let me throw.
I want to hit the text line too.
Okay,
go ahead.
Let's not get too far into this one, but this team has to figure out a way to win some faceoffs. They have won the faceoff battle 4 times in 20 games. They have won more than 50 draws 4 times in 20 games. They, even if they're not winning it consistently, they got to figure out a way to get close. It's a real problem.
Yeah,
it is. Special teams, too.
Yeah.
Special teams, they got to figure out. At least there's been some positive trends the last two games. Okay, just quickly, what player has surprised you the most positively and negatively? Don't have to give reasons, just two players, positive, negative. I think number 10 is probably going to have to be the negative one.
Okay.
Just because, for me anyway.
Yeah.
Because it started so well, and now the pace is even lower than it was last year, which was lower than the year. Like, it started very promisingly.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of regressed back to a spot that we didn't want to see it at.
Yeah.
And then positively.
Let's say you can't answer Dustin Wolf.
Kevin Ball.
Yeah, good answer.
I had no idea what to expect, but yeah. I didn't expect this, that's for sure.
Two good answers, and so I'll pick some different guys so I'm not repeating you. Negatively, I'll start Andre Kuzmenko.
Fair.
I thought, especially in a contract year, I just thought we'd see a little more offense, and I thought he had a good game last. It's not like he's been a dud in every game this season. It's just, you know, the fit under Ryan Huskett doesn't seem to be working any better. Like, as soon as you're trying to protect a lead in the late stages, you're not seeing Kuzmenko. That's not a criticism of the coach, because I absolutely get why you're not. The offensive production isn't there. I expected to see more out of Andre Kuzmenko, in part because of the way he finished last season. And, you know, I thought what they had started to find there. So that would be my negative one. I think this is recency bias positively, but I'm not sure. Like, I feel like I'm watching a different Matt Coronato these last few weeks.
Fair.
The way he wants to bulldoze his way to the net, the way he's willing to call his own number, the confidence he's showing in his shot. Like, I think when Ryan Huska referenced recently that he's doing what he's done at other levels, I honestly feel like I'm watching a different guy. And it's not that I didn't think we'd see this Matt Coronato in the NHL, but I didn't expect to be seeing it a few weeks after I defended them sending him to the minors, because I didn't think it was a crazy decision.
Yeah. All right, want to get to a few texts, and then we got a special guest waiting in just a second as well. Kevin in Nanton, best rebuild ever. This says, American Thanksgiving is next Thursday. That's the unofficial measuring post. Depends who you ask. This says, from Kyle, I'll say this, at least they aren't playing to the skill or matching the other team, much like last year. They're sticking to their play, sustainable or not. They're dynamic, and everyone's playing the same way. That, with the goaltending, this team can contend with the best, and they have. This reads, if they stay healthy, they can keep this up. Cam in traffic says the biggest surprise is who's contributing. This reads, I love it. I hate the idea of tanking and feel strongly that a culture of winning is bigger than any draft pick. The difference this year is Wolf and Vladar. It sure is a lot more fun having these conversations compared to what you guys would be dancing around if they were 7-10-3. That comes from Jay. This says, from Andrew on the train, is it just me or do the guys look and seem to play a bit different in front of Wolf? Times, and I think it's just a confidence thing sometimes.
But I actually think that up to this point is more of a quality of competition.
And I think that could be part of it as well.
I think this has been a team a little more under siege in front of Dan Vladar, but I think that is more opponent-based than anything.
The biggest surprise is having two defensemen leading the team in points still, being where they are in the standings and having the record they have. Mike in Calgary says they're hardworking and resilient. Sarah, our favorite Canucks fan, says, I'll say it again, they're sneaky good, and I'm not a Flames fan. This says, how about Huska for MVP or most valuable Flame? This team struggles with consistency, but he papers over the cracks by leading everyone back to his way of playing and is especially talented at thinning the bench in the third period. This from Aaron, this is a team where nobody feels entitled to wins or to being stars. This is a team where every player brings their lunch pails to the rink every game. Walk softly and carry a stick that you can be proud to hold every day when you have to look yourself in the mirror and go to work. Lots of people just can't be as professional as possible every day. Not their fault. I can't dunk a basketball. Not my fault. But the Flames seem to have taken hockey and said, we want people that'll be able to want to make the best widget every day. Very hard to do no matter what you do for a living. Guys like Zary, Wolf, Ball, Coronado are being groomed as professionals in their craft, not hockey players. Not surprising the GM was the right-hand man for the guy that's the classiest and determined professional the Flames have ever been lucky enough to employ. This says a few too specific ones. These ones don't make any sense. This says on pace for 104 points. Say it isn't so. There's the text line at 960-960.
Lots of good stuff there.
Friday. We are, go ahead, sorry.
No, you go.
Okay, we are, we're jammed up on this, in a good way. We're jammed up on this Friday on Flames Talk. Pat Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson along with you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. Now, I want to get to this because this is very exciting. We got a special guest on the line now because as Amazon's YYC for fulfillment center in Southeast Calgary prepares to fulfill hundreds of thousands of customer orders over the holidays. Flame center Connor Zary and goalie Dustin Wolf visited the site to surprise employees and make a special donation to Food Banks Alberta on Friday. Connor, Dustin, Harvey the Hound got a behind the scenes visit of the 2.8 million square foot facility, which is big enough to fit at least 49 NHL rinks, where they got hands on to help pick, pack, and ship customer orders and get a crash course in Amazon robotics. To cap off their shift, they helped present a $10,000 check for Food Banks Alberta's holiday fund. That was all Friday at Amazon's YYC4 Fulfillment Center in Southeast Calgary. And Dustin Wolf joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. Dustin, really appreciate the time. Just how'd it go today? A fun day with Amazon on Friday.
It was outstanding. I mean, you know, as a consumer, you go online and you figure out what kind of items you want to buy and you click purchase, right? And you don't really know how it miraculously ends up at your door 24 hours later. But, you know, after seeing the facility and seeing how they operate and, you know, it's an unbelievable facility where, you know, they have so many different stations and there's robots everywhere and everything's so automated and there's no errors almost at any time. And, you know, me and Zara put our hands to work and, packaged a couple boxes up. So hopefully a couple of Flames fans get those ones.
So you guys got the opportunity you were actually packing some of those boxes, hey?
Yeah. So they had like, I guess they were calling pods on top of like Roombas where they would come around and bring you items, which then you put into certain bins and then, we went to a different station where those items that we packed, we put in a box, you know, taped the box up, put it in a gift bag, put a barcode on it and slapped it on the next conveyor. So it's a well-oiled machine for sure.
I was talking with Wes. So I was telling him that I was talking to you and Connor and he was like, ask him how much NHLers shop on Amazon, especially, as you're getting more and more of a profile in this city. Like, are you finding yourself on Amazon a little more?
Yeah, I mean, it's very convenient, right? Where, like, I just moved into a new place a couple months ago, and, you know, just the simple stuff that you need. Like, I'm big in electronics, so, like, I like my wired internet connection. So, like, I go online and I buy a bunch of different Ethernet cords, so I get the best internet. And, you know, next thing you know, they show up the next day, and you're good to go. So it's very convenient for sure.
And also the $10,000 check to Food Banks Alberta, and that must have been a pretty cool part about today too.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, anytime we can get on the community and support one Amazon, but their generous donation to the food bank, and you know, especially this time of year, you got families and kids that aren't fortunate enough to have meals every single day, and. No, I know that $10,000 is going to go a long way for them.
How's everything feeling for you, Dustin? It's been a good little groove for you on the ice. How's everything feeling right now?
It's good, man. I mean, anytime you win hockey games, things are a whole lot easier. And, you know, the team's playing, you know, the style of hockey we want to play. And, I mean, last night was a very good example. We dominated a well majority of that game from start to finish, and we certainly deserved to win the game, and obviously we're very glad we did.
Do you feel like you're in a groove? You've been in grooves before, but does this feel like one right now?
Yeah, I definitely feel like I'm playing good hockey. You know, I'm seeing pucks. I'm hitting my marks on the things I want to, you know, mark in my game in terms of, you know, if I'm doing these things, I'm going to, you know, feel successful and be happy with how I played. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're giving up minimal goals and helping your team win, and let alone getting 2 points every night, you're going to be pretty pleased with yourself.
It's, big night for you. Connor Zary scores the game winner. Matt Coronato scores. I mean, guys that you've kind of come up with now contributing at the highest level, that's got to be a pretty cool part of this first quarter of the season, too.
For sure, yeah. We're getting contributions from everyone, whether you're a young guy or, you know, back who's in his 17th year. I mean, it's pretty cool where I've played with Zary for many years now and played with Matty the last couple. And, you know, it's neat where you get to, you know, be around him every day and you get to build a relationship with them. Having being in the same shoes of, you know, you're trying to form the foundation of being an NHL player and, you know, to see both of them having success and obviously the rest of us and guys that are trying to push to come up, it's good. And obviously you want to keep pushing. And if you keep pushing, the team is going to benefit from that.
Last one on back to the what you did on Friday afternoon. Now that you see how Amazon does their stuff, is that going to make you do you feel even more confident ordering online now?
For sure, yeah. I mean, Amazon's always been a very key part of my household. I know my parents order a lot of Amazon, and this is one of the largest facilities in Canada, and you can certainly tell why. It's very well run, and I don't see them slowing down anytime soon.
That's awesome. Well, thanks for doing this with us. Congratulations on the on-ice success, and that's awesome that you were a part of that this afternoon and got to be a part of that great donation to Food Banks Alberta. Thanks for doing this today, Dustin.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Appreciate that.
It's Dustin Wolf of the Calgary Flames. Quick little check-in with him after he and Connor Zary were at Amazon's Fulfillment Center. The YYC4 Fulfillment Center in Southeast Calgary is where they were a little earlier on Friday. Dustin joined us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and deliveries available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Friday. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. Wes Gilbertson and Pat Steinberg along with you. And now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Friday roundtable. Just the one topic on this one today, boys. Truthfully, this was spurred by one of Wes's latest over at the Post Media website. Guys, 10 years ago, Flames got off to a great start in the 14-15 season, surprised a ton of teams, surprised a ton of people, and carried a start where a lot of people doubted them basically all year long. Carried that start into a good season, a playoff berth, and eventually an appearance in round two of the postseason. That was a decade ago in 2014-15. Well, 10 years later, expectations low. Great start to the season. Lots of people still doubting them. And the city really starting to like this group and catch on to, hey, this is a fun team to cheer for. So I'm just curious. Let's kick it around. Similarities and or differences from what we've seen through 20 games this year compared to that group that all three of us covered a decade ago.
Yeah, that was my first season calling Flames games. And I remember when I got the job to follow in the footsteps of Peter Marr, I thought, you know, the Flames probably won't make the playoffs this season or maybe for a few seasons. It looked like they were, you know, starting a rebuild. And expectations were certainly low outside the dressing room. I can't speak about how high they were inside that Flames dressing room back in 2014, 2015. But I think if you were to ask the players, they would probably admit that they didn't expect to get to the Stanley Cup playoffs, or certainly not to win a round once they got to the postseason. But, you know, that team, I think, really had a chip on its shoulder, and they were out to prove all their doubters wrong. And they got off to a pretty good start that season. And I think with that, they started to build some belief and some confidence, and they started playing with some swagger. What I remember most about that season, other than them, you know, winning game six at Scotiabank Saddledome, a game they trailed 3-0 in and battled back and beat the Canucks to move on to round number two of the playoffs. But it was all of those crazy comebacks. There were two or three occasions where the Flames trailed by 2 goals in the third period, pulled their goaltender, scored to make it a 1-goal game, put their goalie back in, pulled him again, scored again to tie it, and then won it in regulation or overtime or a shootout. Just some crazy comebacks. But, you know, that team believed that they were never out of a hockey game. And for me, that's a big similarity. And guys, we were chatting about it earlier today. I really think that in a lot of ways, that 6-5 overtime victory over the Canucks in the season opener set the tone for the Flames season, because it helped them build belief. They were down 4-1 following the first period in that game and battled back and won it in OT. And I think that started to build the belief and the confidence that they were never out of a game, that maybe they would be able to score more goals than people thought, although that's been tough of late, and that they could come from behind to win. And they are tied for the NHL lead in third period comeback wins. They've got 4 of them this season. So that would certainly be one big similarity for me. I do think that on paper, this team has more talent than that team did. I remember there being a bunch of holes in that team filled by guys who probably didn't belong in the NHL, certainly not as full-time players in this league. I don't see any huge holes on this roster. So for me, that would probably be the biggest thing, just the intangibles that they built with all of those come-from-behind wins that helped them, you know, have belief and have confidence and play with some swagger.
Wilsey, I absolutely agree with you. And when I was making the list, those comeback victories, you know, the sort of belief, the flair for the dramatic that team had in 14-15 and this current crew does, that's the biggest similarity for me. But let me give you another one, because you did such a good job of summing that one up already. This is different, but one of the similarities I see, and I think this is really encouraging if you're a Flames fan, one of the big similarities I see is that they're trusting young players in prominent roles. And we all remember, you know, what made that 14-15 team so fun to watch, besides just the fact that you could never count them out of a hockey game, was the emergence of Sean Monahan and Johnny Gaudreau. I mean, those were the guys that brought you to the edge of your seat. Those were the guys that were creating so much future for what might lie ahead for the Flames franchise. And while they don't have that budding superstar, which is what the late, unfortunately, Johnny Gaudreau was at that point, they don't have a budding superstar, I don't think, on this roster, and certainly not at the forward position, but they have young guys in some really important roles. I mean, if you look at their active roster right now, their 3 youngest players are Matt Coronato, Connor Zary, and Dustin Wolf. So there you have Matt Coronato tied for the team goal scoring lead, playing, you know, an important spot on one of your power play units, all that stuff. That's a young guy in a very important role. Connor Zary currently centering what is either your first or second line, depending on, you know, how you maybe rank them. Obviously scores the game-winning goal last night against the New York Rangers. Might have been your best forward on a lot of nights so far this season. Another young guy in a massive role. And then, you know, if the playoffs were around the corner, we'd be talking about Dustin Wolf as a guy getting ready to be the starting goalie, right? Like that. Mm-hmm. He has emerged as the number one netminder for this team. And we're going to see a platoon, which is another similarity with 14-15. That's going to carry on. But I think that's a maybe sort of low-key similarity between these two groups, is that you've got some of your most important future pieces already playing prominent roles.
I think the biggest similarity for me is the fact that we do, even though it hasn't been outside of the Canucks win to start the year, it hasn't been one of those years where you come away from games like with your mind blown. You're like, oh my God, how do they, the Canucks game? Yes. You know, a lot of the wins they've had where they've been trailing, they've been impressive and they've been, you know, they found a way to win games, but they haven't been maybe as dramatic or mind blowing, but that's okay. The same feeling is there in that you're like, geez, the biggest thing that I just remember that 14-15 season and watching that team play, and you'd always just feel like, okay, the other team, good team, bad team, didn't matter. Other teams up by X amount of goals, and you're like, yeah, but you know this team, when they start rolling, they can be pretty dangerous, and nobody rides momentum quite like this group does. And I get that same feeling this year too. And you know, there haven't been a lot of nights where there have been multi-goal leads the Flames have just erased, other than that Vancouver game. But you still get that same feeling, and you still get the, hey, just don't count this group out. And their third periods are obviously as impressive as they're going to get. That would be the biggest similarity to me, because you could poke lots of holes in terms of roster and all that type of stuff, and they'd probably be fair. The other thing, the thing that maybe sets it apart to me is that they're not relying on, but they're getting goaltending that is better than I think they got at any point that year. Remember, that year was Ordio, Ramo, and Hiller. That was the trio that we saw this year. I think what we're seeing from Wolf and from Vladar is better as a tandem than they had in their tandem at any point a decade ago. And that gives me a lot of confidence that I fully expected pretty much all that year them to fall off. They never did. Wilsey, I don't get that same feeling this year. I don't get that same feeling. It's like, okay, well, I mean, they're clearly going to fall off at some point. They might. I'm not saying they won't. I just don't get that same feeling where you're like, okay, this team is so over their skis, and they're getting, you know, outshot and outchanced into oblivion and still finding ways to win. Because I also think this team is a whole lot better, and it's not just blocking shots like Chris Russell did that year. This team, they still don't control games all that often outside of the Rangers game, which they obviously did. They're still on their back foot more than on their front foot. But they defend really well, guys. And I think that is another area that is really impressive. Like, they just, when they're hemmed in or when they're in their own zone, this group really defends well, and they keep teams to the outside at a very impressive rate. So, I don't know. There are definitely some similarities, but I also kind of feel like this group has impressed me more than that team in 14-15 did from an overall standpoint. Although, on the flip side, 10 years ago, some of the wins were definitely more spectacular than we've seen this year.
Yeah, I remember just enjoying the ride, but also waiting for it to end. And when I thought it would for sure come to an end is when the Flames lost Mark Giordano. Because you could argue he was the front runner for the Norris Trophy that season. That's how good he was playing on a pairing with TJ Brody. And then he suffers that torn biceps tendon. And we were talking about it today, reminiscing about how, you know, after that game, I remember going to the team hotel in Newark, and you could kind of tell that it wasn't good based on the body language of the coaches and the managers who were talking about that injury. And then their next game was at Nassau Coliseum. And remember, they trotted him out there for warm-ups, and he could barely shoot the puck. It was clearly a smoke screen as the trade deadline was approaching, and they didn't want other teams to know how injured their captain was. So it was quite a ride, and it didn't come to an end until round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it was a fun season, but I still think that this team has way more talent than that team did. You talked about the block shots, Pat. Nobody's blocking 15 shots a game like Chris Russell did back then. I mean, what a warrior that guy was. But Rasmus Anderson is second in the NHL in block shots this season, behind only Chris Tanev. So for me, it's not because the Flames are hemmed in their own zone as much this season as they were that season, but it's more a sign that guys are willing to do whatever it takes to win hockey games. And Anderson and the rest of the guys have done that. So it's been a fun ride so far, and I'm with you. I'm not sitting here, you know, enjoying it and waiting for it to come to an end at the same time. I actually think this Flames team can get even better than they've been. if they continue to get at least good league average goaltending, and they've had great, well above league average goaltending 20 games into the season, I still think this team has more to offer offensively. Because if you look at the team, there might not be one player who is on pace to have even what's been an average season in this league. And maybe there's one or two or three. There might be a handful. But most of the guys who are proven commodities in the NHL are on pace to finish with way less goals and way less points than they have on average throughout their career. So, you know, if this team can get the power play going, if they can start to score some more goals, I think that takes a little bit of pressure off the goaltenders and off this team and how they play defensively. But it's been a fun ride, and we'll see how long it lasts. It again, might last into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Who knows?
Wilsey, I know we got to wrap here, but you keep saying, and I agree with you, that this group has more proven talent, maybe has less obvious holes in the lineup. But, you know, that 14-15 team had 11 different guys hit double digits in goals. And if we're going to be talking about this group ultimately replicating what that team did, which was earn a playoff spot that nobody saw coming, I think, and you already mentioned this, but that scoring depth and finding ways to get contributions from throughout the lineup is going to be so, so crucial.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, you mentioned the Geo thing from 10 years ago, and I just think to myself, if this team stays healthy, then I think they've got a chance to be in this mix for a good chunk, if not all of the season. You worry about, especially on the back end, one injury. You're like, ooh, that could really start to throw things into disarray. But then again, we thought that a decade ago, and they still
100%.
Dennis Wiedemann stepped up and turned into the best Dennis Wiedemann he'd ever been, and David Schlemko and Chris Russell and so on. Like, it was just like, how are they doing this?
I remember being so annoyed that you could not write or say or whatever anything about that Flames team without just being inundated with unsustainable, unsustainable, unsustainable.
Yeah, and I was probably one of the ones leading the charge at that, and I was such a wet blanket that year that I've matured as a human. Like, no, like, enjoy the ride and see what the hell happens. Like, and I'm definitely like, could they fall off? Of course they could. I think we all understand that maybe this is unsustainable. I have no idea, but I also don't know. And it's so unpredictable in this league, and momentum and belief mean lots too. And so I'm like, just enjoy the ride. And maybe they do carry this into a year where they're competitive right to the very end. And I get it that some people are not happy about them maybe being middle of the pack again. And I think that's even a fair sentiment to have. But to balance that, to wrap it up on my end, Wilsey, if they end up getting to the playoffs, or if they remain in a playoff conversation for the vast majority of this year, here's the silver lining even to that crowd, is that it's going to be on the back of Dustin Wolf. It's going to be on the back of Matt Coronato and Connor Zeri as much as it is on some of the veterans. And if you're talking about the young next wave of Flames being the important pieces, to Wes's point earlier, to getting you into that type of conversation, then I think that there's a real easy-to-see silver lining. And as Frank Saravalli said with us earlier this week, if Dustin Wolf is a Calder Trophy frontrunner in March and April, this team's probably going to make the playoffs, and so far he has been.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Pat. And the other thing is, you know, the Flames are in the position they're in, leaning on young players and asking them to play important roles. And also, Craig Conroy's stockpiled a bunch of draft picks here. You know, it's not like they've emptied out the cupboards just trying to sneak into the Stanley Cup playoffs here. And they've got amongst the most cap space in the NHL. So they're not capped out. I mean, I just think the team's in a really good spot right now. I wonder where they would be if they hadn't battled back to win that season opener versus the Canucks, and how much different this season might look. But they did. And 20 games in, they're 5 games above 500. They're 1 point out of first place in the Pacific Division. And I'm just going to enjoy the ride, guys.
I think that's a good way of putting it. Sorry, I thought Wes had one more.